bewildered by aroma or taste. He does not become attached to some food, feeding, nor does he spend the whole day making arrangements for bodily comfort. The only actual enjoyer of God's creation is the Lord, you know. And the living entities are secondary enjoyers who experience unlimited pleasure through the Lord's pleasure. This perfect process of experiencing pleasure, thought, and bhakti yoga are pure devotional service. And a devotee never sacrifices his auspicious position of steady intelligence, even in the face of so-called material opportunity. That's number 9. A devotee is naturally repelled by sinful activities and controls his senses by dedicating all his acts to Krishna. This requires steady concentration and a cautious mentality. Mrudu, a materialistic person, will always see people as friends or enemies, and thus will sometimes justify cruel or small-minded behavior in order to subdue his opponents. Since a devotee has taken shelter of Lord Krishna, he does not consider anyone's enemy, and is never disturbed by the tendency to desire and enjoy the suffering of others. Thus he is mrudu, gentle, and sublime. Suci, a devotee, never touches that which is impure or improper. Simply by remembering such a pure devotee, one is freed from the tendency to sin. Because of his perfect behavior, devotee is called suci or pure. Akinchana, a devotee is free from possessiveness and is not eager to enjoy or renounce anything, since he considers everything to be Lord Krishna's property. Aniha, a devotee never acts on his own behalf, but rather for the service of Lord Krishna. He is therefore aloof from ordinary worldly affairs. Mitabhuka, a devotee accepts material sense objects only as far as necessary to keep himself healthy and fit in the Lord's service. He is therefore not entangled by sense activities and never injures his self-realization. When necessary, a devotee can give up anything for Lord Krishna's service, but he does not accept or reject anything for his personal prestige. Shanta, those trying to exploit the Lord's creation are always disturbed. A devotee, however, is detached from such pointless activities and understands sense gratification to be directly opposed to his self-interest. Being always engaged according to the Lord's desire, he remains peaceful. Stira, remembering that Lord Krishna is the basis of everything, and a devotee does not become fearful or impatient. Matsharana, a devotee does not take pleasure in anything except serving Lord Krishna and is constantly attentive in the execution of his duties. A devotee knows that only Lord Krishna can protect him and engage him in useful work. Muni, a devotee is thoughtful and through intelligent contemplation avoids becoming distracted from his spiritual endeavor. And by intelligence he is freed from doubts about Lord Krishna and confronts all problems in life with steady Krishna consciousness. Okay. So that covers the second verse. So here we have a list of qualities of the devotee of the Lord. So here Krishna is describing these qualities. We will see qualities described several places in the Bhagavatam. We will also see qualities described in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Different qualities of the devotee are described. There's different numbers. I don't know exactly how many numbers there is here. There are 28 qualities. There are 28 qualities here, and there are 23 other places. And different amounts of qualities, a list of qualities. Similarly, we have qualities of a brahmana mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, etc. So, the importance of this is that we can recognize devotees because they manifest certain qualities. In other words, we can recognize an object by qualities. So we can describe an object. This object is blue and it moves very quickly, and it is smooth or whatever. And then we can identify on that object there. Or a Dalmatian dog is black and white, no, white with black spots, a little skinny. So we can identify a Dalmatian dog as a poodle, which has fluffy hair, whatever. By having listing qualities, we can identify different objects. So this is useful because we can identify the devotee from the non-devotee. And among devotees, we can recognize different types of devotees. There is Kanishthas, Madhyamas, Uttamas, different types, stages of devotees. So, distinction of devotee and non-devotee is very important, because if we don't, we associate with the wrong persons, that's asatva sangha, and then we become materialistic. So we have to distinguish devotee from non-devotee. Then, we also have to distinguish the different grades of devotees. It is very important for the Madhyama Adhikari to distinguish between the Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama, because he associates and treats these three classes in different ways. And if he doesn't, then he does not advance. So the Madhyama Adhikari therefore must distinguish between different types of devotees as well as devotees and demons. This is, let's say, important for everyone's advancement. We have to make distinctions. So the Madhyama Adhikari, what does he do with the Kanishtha? He teaches him. What does he do with the Madhyama Adhikari? He associates in a friendly way, because they're equals. And with Uttama, he serves, he follows his order, because he's superior. So we have to know superior, equal, and junior, and treat them differently. If we treat them in a different way, then we end up with problems. So if we treat the Uttama as a Kanishtha, obviously we're going to get problems. If we treat the Kanishtha as an Uttama, we're going to get problems also by taking advice from the wrong person. So we have to be very careful about how we treat people, even as devotees. That's why, one of the reasons why we have the different qualities, so that the devotees can recognize who is a devotee and a non-devotee. For a non-devotee, it doesn't really matter, because they don't care about devotees and they have no faith in devotees, so the list is not important for them at all. So it's basically for devotees. So we'll find various lists with various numbers in them. Obviously, the lists are not exhaustive. It doesn't mention every single quality a devotee could have, because there's so many qualities, unlimited qualities. Just like Krishna has unlimited qualities, but then we say he has 64 qualities in Krishna and 60 in Narayana. That's not everything. That's only a basic outline to give us a general idea. Similarly, these qualities here are also general qualities. I'm not an exhaustive list of every single quality a devotee should have, but it gives us a good idea of this, who is a devotee, who is a non-devotee. However, we'll also see in the Nectar of Devotion that Rupa Goswami says that cultivation of good qualities is not part of bhakti. So that means, what that means is that in devotional service we have different angas, like hearing, so we hear about Krishna, and that causes our bhakti to develop. Or we have chanting in the name of Krishna, and that causes bhakti to develop. Or we have deity worship, that causes, or menial service, cleaning the temple room, that causes bhakti to develop in the Atma. What about cultivating good qualities like controlling the tongue and controlling activities and renouncing all material enjoyments and stuff like that, and controlling the senses, sama, etc., all these different things, cleanliness. So what are they in relation to devotional service? These are qualities, but at the same time, Rupa Goswami says these are not angas of bhakti, these specific qualities. So why is that? The reason is that cultivation of qualities is part of sattva, and devotional service is beyond sattva. So for instance, we can be non-violent or whatever, okay, we become vegetarian, etc. So yes, that's good, it's favorable for devotional service. That itself is not a cause of bhakti, because there are many vegetarians who aren't devotees, and maybe atheists even, and they can go on all their life like that. That does not produce bhakti. Non-violence does not produce bhakti, tolerance does not produce bhakti, etc. These things don't produce bhakti. So in that sense, they're not considered main angas of bhakti, because they don't cause bhakti and cause bhakti to develop. Certainly they're supportive, but they don't cause it. So like all the regulator principles in themselves, you can follow all the regulator principles and not be a devotee all your life. Many people indeed do that. Many Mayavadis do that too. They never become devotees. So in themselves, they are not angas of bhakti. Nevertheless, if we don't follow them, of course, it's very detrimental to bhakti as well. So that is why we will not find the four regular principles among directly mentioned among the in the nectar devotion by Rupa Goswami among the 64 angas. You won't see them there. So we have different activities and different qualities here listed. And as I said, many of these things have to do with sattva, sattvic existence. Now, sattva definitely is favorable for bhakti, and therefore Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, when he describes the gunas, he says that of the three, sattva, rajas, and tamas, sattva is better. Because there at least we can realize the distinction between atma and body, self and body. But prakasha is one of the qualities of sattva guna. It means revelation, means knowledge. What kind of knowledge? Not material knowledge, obviously. So it means we understand the difference between atma and body. So that sense is good. That, of course, is called jnana. It's not bhakti. So jnana is also sattva. Bhakti, jnana yoga is actually sattva guna also. It's not transcendental. The process is actually sattva. And when we come to sattva guna, these qualities are listed here. And being merciful, non-violent, tolerant, etc., truthful. We'll see these among the qualities of Brahmins also. These are Brahminical qualities. So, the aim of the devotee is not to cultivate sattva, the aim of the devotee is to cultivate devotion. A little different, yeah? And those cultivating devotion means, first of all, we do the main things which will cultivate that devotion. The way of hearing, chanting, deity worship, bowing down, putting on tilak. These are angas of bhakti which create more bhakti in the atma. Whereas being truthful, whatever, don't actually create bhakti in themselves. Nevertheless, they are favorable. So we put them somewhere. We have to put them somewhere as supportive elements. So therefore, you'll see in the nectar of instruction there, Rupa Goswami has also mentioned things like controlling the senses, controlling the tongue, etc., the belly, the words, etc., and certain things are unfavorable, certain things are favorable for bhakti. So we'll find things like that come in this category. Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes an interesting has an interesting viewpoint. He calls some things primary angas of bhakti, those which directly create devotional service, like hearing, chanting, 64 angas of bhakti. And then other things which are favorable, he puts as gonavidhi, those things taken from varnashram system, like cleanliness and tolerance and all these type of things. He puts as gonavidhi for secondary things, because they don't create bhakti, but they're favorable for bhakti, they support it. So those things in the varnashram system which are favorable for bhakti, like sattva guna, etc., okay, we accept. Those things which are unfavorable in the varnashram, we have to reject. So unfavorable elements would be things like worshipping devatas and all the sort of things like that. So that part we reject. Other parts which are okay, like cleanliness, etc., we accept. Nevertheless, we have to make a distinction. They don't actually create cleanliness. Just by being clean, it doesn't create bhakti. It's good for bhakti, but it doesn't create it. So therefore, we distinguish between the two things. So, and we'll see in Bhagavad Gita, in the commentary there, and in Bhagavatam here, that the main quality of the devotee is his devotion. So here it's matsharana. Surrender to the Lord. Surrender to me, Krishna is saying. So this is the main thing, the main quality of the devotee. Everything else is secondary. So the main thing is, we're cultivating devotional service. We are doing the main angas of bhakti. Matsharana means surrender to me. How does that come about? By the main angas of bhakti, that is hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. So that is the main quality of the devotee, how we recognize him. And the more he engages in that, the better. And the less he engages in that, then the lower he is. So we get Kanishta Madhyama Uttama. One who is always engaged by surrendering to Krishna, he's Uttama. One who is literally engaged, a little bit engaged, is called a Kanishta. One who is in between is called a Madhyama. That's very simple. So, as I said, qualities and activities, secondary activities and qualities are okay. But we also know that the process of bhakti is subhada. That's the second quality of bhakti and nectar devotion, yeah? Subhada. Kleshagni subhada. And one of the definitions of subhada is shatguna. Yeah? To develop good qualities. Another one is affection for all living entities. And of course, in the commentary, I think Jiva says, well, actually, that's also a quality. Why is it separated? This is because of the main quality. So compassion for all living entities is the main quality, and then we have other good qualities that develop in the devotee. So without extra endeavor, by performing bhakti properly, all the good qualities should develop. So we don't have to put an extra endeavor to try to be truthful, and try to be non-violent, and try to be this and try to be that. If we put a lot of effort into the surrender to Krishna, that is the devotional aspect, the main angas, then automatically one should become non-violent and tolerant and peaceful and sense-controlled, etc. So in that sense, the qualities follow devotional service. This is, we say, jnana and vairagya automatically appear with cultivation of devotional service. So we don't have to separately cultivate jnana, I am not the body, I am not the body, etc. Or vairagya, renunciation of attachment to material things. We don't have to separately cultivate those things. So these, of course, are major angas in yoga and jnana. We have to cultivate detachment as the main character. But in devotional service, we don't so much cultivate detachment and sense control, etc., as attachment to Krishna. So we emphasize the positive, whereas yoga and jnana will emphasize the negative. Let's become detracted and detached from the material world. But the devotee is emphasized as become attracted to Krishna. By doing that, the detachment takes place. However, we cannot say, okay, I will just be very, very attracted to Krishna, I'll cultivate that. At the same time, I will enjoy the material world as much as I can. So that also doesn't work. So therefore, we cannot completely ignore our qualities and the activities which are secondary. We have to some degree, you know, be aware of those things, but that's not the main emphasis. The main emphasis is the surrender to the Lord, the devotional service aspect, and all the other things develop. So, now the devotee develops qualities. So if the devotee develops sattvic qualities will bind them in the material world. The sattva-guna. So if he goes to the spiritual, he has to give up everything in sattva-guna. He has to give up all those qualities. So what's the use of doing that? So, when the devotee develops devotional service, his qualities are not sattvic. His qualities are transcendental. Just like the Lord has 64 transcendental qualities, we'll see these qualities I'll mention there also, except Matsaranam's not there, but all the other qualities are there. So the Lord also is compassionate and sense control and grave, gambira, etc., intelligent, all these things with respect to others. So the Lord has 64 qualities also. Those are not material qualities. Those are spiritual qualities. Similarly, the devotee will also develop spiritual qualities. They may look like they're sattvic qualities, but they're not. So, these qualities are qualities which are manifested through the Atman by devotion. Sattvic qualities are manifested by sattva-guna. If you develop sattva-guna, then you develop those qualities. That's by the bindings of the material world. And these qualities here automatically develop when our devotion becomes stronger and stronger. So these are spiritual qualities. Just like if the example is given of the the crystal, the white crystal, the clear crystal, nicely clear crystal, and we put it next to the red carnation, then it looks a little reddish and it becomes red. And we put it next to the yellow carnation, it becomes yellowish. And we put it next to the white carnation, and it's whitish. So that contact of the crystal with different objects, it picks up the association. So that example is given, therefore beware of asatsanga in the material world, because you're like a crystal. And you go into the asatsanga, which is black, and we become black. Just like a crystal becomes red. So we go near the asat sangha person, asat person, then we become blackish. We pick up the same qualities as that person very easily. Huh? So therefore we go near the dhoti. So we pick up their qualities. So those are the spiritual qualities we can pick up. Not the material qualities. Spiritual qualities. Huh? Similarly, with the devotional service, we are establishing attraction to Krishna. So we're coming close to Krishna. So then, obviously, we develop qualities like Krishna. Of course, we can never develop exactly the same amount, but at least there is some semblance of risk or some similarity there. So therefore, by developing devotional service, we manifest many of the qualities which are also present in Krishna, to a smaller degree, nevertheless there. So actually, these qualities we should not take as material qualities. They may look like they are sattvic qualities, but actually they are transcendental qualities, spiritual qualities, like Krishna's qualities. But they will manifest according to our devotion. So the more one develops in devotional service, the more these qualities should manifest. And the less one develops in devotional service, then obviously the less they're going to manifest. However, sometimes we'll see a person is already in sattva guna, so he can manifest qualities which look like this. They may not have much devotion. So we cannot always judge the status of the devotee by the external manifestation of these qualities, because there may be the sattva quality and maybe transcendental. We don't know which one. So he may only be sattvic. He may have little faith, very little faith, the sattvic brahminical person. And we'll say he's a great devotee, but maybe he's not. Because the devotion is not there. But the sattvic qualities are already there, maybe due to his family and upbringing, whatever. So we'll worship as a great devotee, but actually he's not. He's got very little surrender. We have to be careful. So therefore we cannot measure simply by these qualities, unless we can distinguish between the sattvic quality and transcendental quality. So the main element, therefore, is the surrender. How much a person is surrendered to the Lord, whether he's 20% surrendered, 80% surrendered, 50% surrendered, and how are we going to figure that out? The only way is by how much he is concentrating on topics related to Krishna, and how much he's concentrating on topics related to Maya, then we can understand. So that's the easiest way of judging the devotee. So that's the main purpose. Anyway, but these qualities are good, because we'll see actually as a devotee advances, then obviously he's going to manifest more of these qualities in a higher degree. Even if they don't develop properly, it is not a problem, as long as the surrender is there. Sometimes due to past or whatever, habits or whatever, when one surrenders, all the good qualities will not develop at the same time, at the same degree. And they may be false also, because of that. You still got material things. But the scriptures say that we should not look at the fault so much. We should look at the surrender. That's all. Because we are convinced that with that surrender, as it progresses, all those faults will also disappear. So we have to see the positive rather than the negative in the person. So that is the main principle we should follow here in looking at the qualities of the devotee, etc. So here we have things like things like Danta, Mrdu, Suchi, Kinchana, Iha, Mitabu, Shanta, Stira, Saramuni. A lot of these have to do with sense control, actually. We're controlling the senses. So how do we control the senses? By engaging them in service, not by stopping the senses. So stopping the senses is the activity of the jnani and the yogi. Through the process of pranayama and pratyahara and dharana and jnana, we gradually withdraw the senses and concentrate it on mantra or object or whatever, meditation or paramatma. Or basically stopping the senses. And jnana, of course, they don't have an object of meditation, they're just trying to do vairagya and minimize the functions of the senses by fasting, etc. Renunciation. So in devotional service, rather we try to engage all the different senses, not stop them, but rather engage them all as much as we can in devotional activities. So So that is the process of bhakti. So this is considered an easier process, also a quicker process. And the result accomplishes whatever Jnana and Yoga produce, which is peace. But it also accomplishes more. That is, we don't only get peace and liberation from material world, destruction of karma and ahankara, etc., subtle body, but we also get prema. So this is the this is what makes bhakti superior to the other processes. The goal is not simply to get rid of the try to control the senses and get rid of karmas and ahankara. That is a secondary product of devotional service. Liberation is not desired by the devotees, only service to Krishna is. So when you perfect that service, it is called prema. Now the result of that prema is ananda. But even ananda is not the goal of the devotee. The goal of the devotee is the service. It is anyabhilasha shunya, that's only. Krishna vanasilam, that's our only goal. So the goal is only the service. The result is ananda. Yes, we become completely satisfied, we become completely blissful. And, of course, we are already liberated. The process of bhakti is beyond liberation. Klesha Agni means it destroys karmas, desires, ahankara, avidya, which are the cause of suffering in the material world and the cause of bondage. It's all automatically accomplished. So therefore, liberation is already achieved for the devotee. Through the one develops bhava and prema, then it's already accomplished. So, but the main goal of the devotee is simply that service, surrender to the Lord and service to the Lord, and giving the Lord, pleasing the Lord. These are the main items. And this accomplishes everything else. So those things which are favorable to the development, we accept. And those things which are unfavorable, we reject. And that's the main principle.
Okay. Is the portion of the demigods favorable for bhakti or unfavorable? Because
it can be unfavorable if we are thinking we must worship the devatas, and if we don't, we're sinful. Then it's unfavorable. Because the idea is that Krishna is independent of everything. By worshipping Krishna, everybody else is satisfied. We don't have to do anything else. Now, we may worship the devatas also, but there's a correct way of doing it. So if we worship the devatas only because Shastra says so, fine, but we should not be attached to it. And then when we worship them, we should also realize that they are only like angas of the Supreme Lord. They are dependent on the Supreme Lord. So we worship them secondarily. So we worship the Lord, then we worship the devatas, and we give the prasad of the Lord to the devatas. So we have to recognize the devas only as servants of the Lord, and in our worship we also have to reflect that. If we do so, then there's no problem. On the highest level, however, devotee and bhava or prema, they would kind of reject that also because of the waste of time that's so attractive to the Lord that it becomes, they have no attraction to distracting themselves from the Lord, so they want to completely concentrate on the Lord, so they would give all that up. Those on a lower level, they may have an obligation to family members or society or whatever, engage, go for it. Things like that, just like even Krishna goes to the thing or worships Shiva or something, or Ram worships Shiva, or Rukmini goes to the Durga temple or whatever, and just out of custom like that. But actually, there's no attachment there at all.
So it depends somewhat on the level of a person. For somebody who sort of starts at the point of demigod worship from doing nothing, that may be playable for bhakti. Because part of demigod worship is worshipping
anyway.
So at that point it may be favorable for But somebody who's engaged in devotional service and is
the higher he gets, I suppose, to be less favorable because it's more of a distraction for him. On a lower stage if he is attached to devatas, then he could include them with the proper understanding. That's why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says they worship the devatas avidipurvaka, not following the proper rule. So there's a proper way in which you can worship David, there's an improper way. So they do the improper way, therefore they're foolish because they're looking for material results from David that's not worshiping the Lord. They don't see that the Lord actually is the cause of everything. So in Bhagavad Gita it says, therefore, and candle of food.
In any case,
worship the Lord. He, if you have no desires, if you have all desires, if you have desire for liberation, if you have desire for bhakti, in any case, worship the Lord only, because he'll give everything. So even if you have all desires, you should worship the Lord. The sakama bhakti, where we just worship the Lord and still we have desires, is better than sakama bhakti, where we're worshiping devatas and the Lord. So better just worship the Lord, and he will fulfill your material desires also. But better than that, of course, is worship the Lord without those material desires. That's how I say it. That's pure bhakti.
You know, we were talking about judging the qualities or secondary qualities, and sometimes we also hear that senior devotee saying, "Oh, if you had a body like that, you would have acted exactly like him." So, and also in case of Dhritarashtra, he was a great devotee, but he was not externally acting like a devotee or any gentle or something. So, is it that certain behavioral patterns, no matter what, still remains in the person, no matter how they have
material patterns?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's contrary to bhakti. Because we find in the Bhagavatam, for instance, it says if you half chant one syllable of the name, then all your karmas are destroyed and you're qualified to do a savana, which means a yajna, which is what a Brahmin does, or by remembering the Lord once, or whatever, so many different little things you could do, and then you could destroy all your karmas immediately and you're qualified for other activities. So now your material body, the appearance doesn't change maybe, but actually you become qualified. So that means all the qualities have been transformed by the process of bhakti. And even in the case of Ajamila, when he named his son Narayana, all of his karmas were destroyed. All his desires were destroyed. Yeah? And then we can say, how can that be? Because they look like, he's still sinful afterwards, etc. and whatever. But this is the decision of scripture to say so. That simply chanting Nama Bas, that will destroy all your karmas, give you liberation. So all your karmas are destroyed. How is it possible? Because we see that Ajamil didn't look like he was pure after that. He didn't act like a sage or a muni or a devotee. He didn't act like he was before. He still married the prostitute and had taken care of his children and doing sinful activities. The answer is that that's an appearance. Actually, everything was destroyed already before he died. So actually all of his karmas were actually destroyed, but there's an appearance. So sometimes bhakti hides the destruction of karmas and gives an appearance that the person is still sinful. But those so-called sinful activities are compared to the toothless serpent. Serpent bites, but nothing happens. So he does those activities, but they don't give any bad effect. Sometimes bhakti hides its glories, and then the person acts the same. Sometimes, of course, it automatically simply develops, like as in the case of a person like Rigari the Hunter. He changed, transforms very quickly. It's completely devotional. In the case of Ajamil, no. Nama Bas gave him this effect of destroying karmas, but still there was an appearance of karmas. So that's not real karma after that point. Now, the other scenario is that if you do the Nama Bas or even chant with faith, but you have aparadhas, it does not destroy your karmas immediately and everything is gone. There's a more gradual effect. So therefore, we actually go through the process of Nartanda Vritti, Nishtha Ruchi, and Asakti, and all this gradually go up. If there's also offense or aparadha involved. If there's no offense, then you can get very quick effect. So then we have to be careful when we criticize the person. Hey, he's got all these bad qualities. Maybe it's only the appearance. Maybe they are destroyed. We don't know. But if there is offense, then we can't say that it's all destroyed. There'll be a gradual destruction of karmas and desires and all that bad habits. Anarthas.
Nanovas is an unattentive chanting.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two levels. One is accidental, as in the case of Ajamil. And that means you chant the name with a different intention. So Ajahn Mill chanted Narayan because it was his son, not because it was Vishnu. And that destroyed his karma. That's one thing. Another is in fear or whatever, we can chant the name, or inattentively to say the name suddenly or whatever. Different ways we can use that name without actually meaning the Lord, you know. So that is all called namabhas. That's with no faith. Then we have namabhas with faith. That is, we chant, but we have ignorance. We don't quite know who Krishna is. We have some faith, but we maybe Krishna's, you know, equal to the Devata sometimes. You know, we got some foggy ideas, or maybe we emerge into Brahman or something. So we got some vague ideas that are maybe not devotional. Then that makes it namabhas. And then if we have what we call anarthas, or various things, strong desires for material enjoyment or liberation, etc., siddhis, etc., that can also create a bhas. And if we have the aparads, which are not really intentional but more, you know, accidental, things like that, then that can also be considered not a bhas. So it is actually, there's two types of namabhasa, the accidental one and the one when you're actually a devotee where it's not really pure. You know, there's lots of coverings of material desires, etc., mixed into it.
So someone's in a restaurant, we get customers, they come in and they get on their mobile phone and they say, I'm at the Hare Krishna's. I want anything.
Yeah, so that's namabhasa.
Does that clear all this incorrection?
Good, if they didn't have any apparatus. You know. Yeah.
But they're not going to be known apparatus.
Yes, well, that's not the real. Yeah. Maybe they are.
You're a devotee.
That doesn't make them devotees. It clears their karma.
So actually, just by doing that, they clear their karma.
But yeah, just like Ajahn Mill wasn't a devotee when he met Yamaraj and all this. He got his karma cleared, therefore they couldn't take him. And actually his lifespan wasn't really up at that time, but because he was so sinful he actually lessened his possibilities. And then the Vishnu Guru said he can't take him because he chanted the name Narayan, so then his full length of life was restored. He came back to life. Then he became inspired to be a devotee because he had met the Yamadutas, the Vishnu Dutas, and he heard their speech. So then he became a devotee, he went to Haridwar, and then became purified with devotional service. Then he went to Vaikuntha. But just doing the namabhas, he cannot go to Vaikuntha. He didn't have bhakti. He had only clearing his aparati, not for liberation, but not for bhakti.
So the person by chance is Hare Krishna.
Yeah, then if they don't commit the aparati, then they could actually get liberation.
Do they have further karma for themselves after that point?
Ajahn Mill did. All of the activities after that were not karmas anymore. He didn't suffer karmas for those things. Because the scripture says that, you know, by chanting once you destroy all the karmas, past, present, future. So if we can take an exaggeration, then we commit offense against the holy name. That's
destroy
another offense. Huh?
Destroy future.
Yes, that's past, present, future. All the karmas you could possibly commit, you know, are destroyed.
How can ignorant people cover their thoughts from an authorized path and follow the scriptures? Because these days, we might try to talk to somebody about philosophy, but everything is already followed through the path. All the models are in their head, and they don't really have the understanding. And even those people that follow, they don't have the same dogmas impressed upon them, even out of the karma.
Probably in the modern day, it may be very difficult to do that for most people if they already have some faith. So first we have to create faith. And faith we'll create mainly by prasadam. Or hearing the name and like that, but not so much preaching as just exposure to the devotees and to the prasadam and the hearing and chanting and things like that. Gradually by that, then they get a little faith, then they're willing to accept an authority. Otherwise it's very difficult for them to accept authority in the modern world. In India, it's not so difficult in ancient times because everybody has some authority. But modern world, everybody wants to be independent, so it's a little more difficult. So probably just have to start with the exposure. When they get enough faith, then we can preach like that for them. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we can always, you know, encourage them or whatever. You know, make it difficult to force an authority down on their on them. You know.
Raga Rupa Bhakt, if he does commit an intentional apradh, is the whole keeper, the whole keeper is destroyed?
Anyone, whether it's Raga Nuga or Vaini Bhakti, if they commit intentional apradh, is dangerous, especially Vaishnava apradh.
Unintentional.
Unintentional, in either case, is not so bad. It creates an obstacle, but it does not destroy bhakti. But if it is intentional, especially the Vaishnava apradh, then it creates great problems.
The whole people is destroyed.
Not necessarily, but depending on the intensity. You know, the intensity of apradh is also not just apradh and non-apradh, but how serious it is. And particularly the Vaishnava apradh, when that is very serious, then it can destroy, because we see that the mad elephant offense, and the mad elephant comes in the garden, steps on the plants, dead, finished. Doesn't grow anymore, uprooted. Maybe the elephant can come in there and tear it out with his trunk, and it's gone. So there's no more bhakti. So if the apradh is serious enough, then you can end up with no bhakti. You start from zero. No faith, nothing. And then you have to wait for mercy again, and many lifetimes, and cultivate it again through a Gyato Sukritis or something like that. Okay. Thank you.